Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Well, we get into a reimagined C2 Corvette. We get into Kevin Hart's Charger. We give you an update on the BRE 510. We get into some Audi EV talk. But first, Matt's got Dodge.
Yeah, you know, Dodge has officially opened the orders for the 2021 Durango SRT Hellcat. It's the most powerful SUV ever. I asked for one to test drive because I've heard this thing will do 0-60 in 3.5 seconds for a full-size SUV. It's pretty nuts. But exclusive for 2021, it features a 710-horsepower engine. It's got a new aggressive exterior styling and a new interior with a driver-centric cockpit. All buyers also receive a full day of pro instruction at the Bondurant High Performance Driving School. Deliveries will begin early this year, so get your orders in now. You know, and Dodge was ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer or visit Dodge.com today to schedule a test drive.
This is Michael Cohen. Joining me next week on Mea Culpa Podcast is the one and only Stormy Daniels.
There's so many things that he talked about with me that were so illegal that nobody ever touches upon.
That's right, folks. The conversation you've all been waiting for is finally happening. For the first time ever, we sit down to talk about what really happened that night in Donald Trump's hotel room.
He had stripped down to his underwear and was perched on the bed doing his best yet horrifyingly disturbing impression of Burt Reynolds.
Sex, politics, money, and crime. This one's got it all. Download this special episode of Mea Culpa beginning Tuesday, February 9th at midnight Eastern for the podcast event of the year. Mea Culpa, nothing but the truth.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice, but they're going to mandate you get it on. Welcome to CarCast. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea over there.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Let me just shout out to our friends at Dodge before we kick things off. You know, Dodge is ranked number one for initial quality and best driver appeal for mass market brands by J.D. Power. It's the first U.S. brand ever to be ranked number one in initial quality and appeal in the same year. So see your local Dodge dealer today or visit Dodge.com to schedule your test drive.
All right, so we got lots of car stuff to get into here today. First, questions about my Lincoln Aviator. Wait a minute, am I driving the Aviator?
Yes, you're driving the Aviator. That's first question solved.
All right. Well, coming up next, we're going to talk about the C2 Corvette. Now, I haven't figured out the plug-in electric part yet.
Okay.
I haven't even went and looked at the plug or anything. I don't know if it's even going to work on 110. It may be all just... First question, what's the range? Like 19 miles or something?
I think it's a little more on that car, but it could be like 22.
Okay. And then the next one is, can you just plug it into 110 or do you have to... you know, get the 220 and the charger and everything.
You should be able to plug it into 110. It's going to be an overnight charge to get a full charge.
Right.
But also keep in mind that the 20-mile range is EV only. When it's in hybrid mode, the combined miles per gallon goes up, you know, yeah. It improves significantly.
21. So I should just plug it in. And then the next question is, one we brought up before, we've oftentimes discussed, you know, already running the stuff to the garage for the Tesla charger. And, you know, so you got this pain in the ass 220, 240, you know, long, big conduit and everything. Mm-hmm. And then you got the Tesla charger. We've always talked about, is there some adapter or how does it work? Or how does it work when you're out in the wild and you want to plug it in at the Santa Monica Promenade? Is there a Tesla plug-in port and then a GM plug-in port? Like, how's that work?
No, because there's a universal port that works on pretty much all of those cars. And then there's mm-hmm. like the Tesla charger, whatever, has like an extra prong or you know, like
right.
notch, right? That makes it
seems
just
like
for Tesla. So
seems, I don't know if it seems like it, but it makes sense that there may be an adapter out there somewhere.
Possibly. I haven't looked into it, right? Because I haven't really had the need
for speed.
To look into it. But you know, For example, I test drove this Volvo plug-in hybrid the other day, mm-hmm. and in the back there was a cable, and at the end of the cable, the last like 18 inches, it had a twist-off adapter.
Uh-huh.
And it had a 110 and the 220, or mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to my warehouse, I have the 220 plug there, so I just used that and it worked.
Oh, I
right?
see.
So I don't know what cable is included with the Aviator. We mm-hmm. haven't got a chance to kind of open the back hatch to see what kind of plug is in there.
Right.
But you might have to. We checked briefly and it was like wrapped in plastic. You didn't even get a chance to open it up yet. That was a week or two ago.
All right. Well, we'll investigate and keep you guys posted as if you care. Also, yellow paint is going on the BRE 510. Looks good. Sean's been doing a nice job over there.
Yeah, the white came out great, and he's been you know, there's not a lot of photos because I was talking to him this morning and, you know, he's got a couple photos. And so what we're going by is the other BRE car, the 85 car. So to the extent that that car
– number 85.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is to the extent that those stripes are actually perfect or dead on or you know, whatever they used to make that car, that's what he's using for your car, which is good. I mean, it's good to have that car there.
Well, at least both cars will match, even if they're both
right.
Wrong.
At least those will be the same. Yeah, we got a picture of it. He's doing a lot, you know, just a lot of the fine line tape and getting the whole thing laid out. And
well, I told him, look at the 85 BRE car, but also look at the pictures. So, you know, make sure. So we have some old pictures of the car. It's old pictures of the car when the car was kind of beaten on a little bit. Front valance was jacked up, you know, mm-hmm. clearly, mm-hmm. you know, there is a little, all those cars, or I shouldn't say all of them, but many of those cars, you know, showed up for delivery in their BRE livery or whatever livery they were for delivery in, you know, 1968. And then they ran them for a few years and then they got kind of beat on and then most of the time, half the time, they got sold to some other guy. Mm-hmm. And then that guy campaigned it for a while from, you know, 77. Well, I'm trying to think what year that BRE car would have been more like 70, maybe 69 or 70. But either way. So then somebody else runs the car and they always move to Florida at some point. And some point the car goes to the Dominican Republic for some reason. And you can always find some old shots of the car running from 10 years after it was delivered, you know. So now you see pictures of the car running at Watkins Glen in 1977. And it has a few new stickers on it mm-hmm. for some whatever muffler shop is in town. And, you know, some of the parts like the front valance are gone or whatever it is. But it you can still see the stripes. You can still see how the car was delivered. And then usually at some point, somebody gets hold of it, gives it a full repaint, puts it in blue, puts it in their own livery, and then they go out and run the car for a while. But you will find those old, like it seems like the pictures we have are not from the day it was delivered or the year it ran, but maybe 7-8 years later when you could still see the stripes and the lettering and stuff. And, you know, it's every bit is good because it's original, it's accurate, it's just the car looks a little faded, you know.
Right,
And I don't actually, as I think about that car, I don't even think that car ever got like a repaint or anything like that.
I don't know, but they do get kind of banged up over the years, especially just from moving them around, not even just from racing, of course, from racing as well. But, you know, I was talking to Sean about it. I was like, yeah, it looks pretty straight. He's like, it wasn't when we got it. He's like, you try to put the fender flare on there, it's just a wavy, bumpy.
Right.
It's like it's never gonna. It takes some work.
Well,
it takes,
you know,
a little bit.
If you think about the culture and the history of race cars, they beat up on Ferraris and Lamborghinis and whatever, you know, Daytona, Cobra Daytonas and all that after their usefulness, after their sort of prime or their heyday. Now we're talking about a Datsun 510.
Yeah.
So a Datsun 510 is a shitbox. And if there's any reverence at all for the old Porsche or the old Ferrari, it's completely out the window when it comes to the old Datsun. So in the middle years when those things got raced and nobody seemed to give a shit, and they definitely took the brunt of a lot of tough racing and beating, and nobody was really interested in them. Now, of course, there's reverence for these old Datsuns, and they're worth something, and so now it's a different story.
Yeah, well, car's looking good, and he got some of the yellow down, as you mentioned, like one of the stripes, and then he's working on the next.
Yeah, it kind of
step of.
You can kind of start to see how the yellow and white look actually pretty good together,
yeah.
And it's, you know, it's not the kind of thing that you would necessarily pick out if you were just getting a fresh sheet of paper and saying, you know, I want to lay out a color scheme for my car, but the yellow and white works kind of nicely when you see the yellow on the car. It's a nice hue of yellow.
Yeah.
And again, once they start riding in the black Datsun and the red BRE, or was it the red Datsun and the black BRE, whatever, when they start mixing in some other colors and things like that, it's going to end up being a really good looking car, like on its own, not just, oh, I know the history of this car, it's cool to me. But I think when the dust is settled, when the hand painting comes in, when the stickers go on and all that kind of stuff, I think it's going to be, I'm looking at the fender right now. It's like, it's a good looking yellow. It seems like it's got some orange in it. And
And once it's done with the clear coat and polished up and stuff, because that's just the raw paint. Because in that, you know, we're looking at this little video I posted up on Instagram. You know, the white looks flat right now because it was just shot. There's no clear or anything on it. It hasn't been sanded or.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it'll be such an identifying car, right? It's, I mean, the red, white, and blue cars look cool, but there's a handful of red, white, and blue cars out there, and you'll see this one go, oh, which, you know, you're running the yellow one. You're running the yellow 510.
Right.
You know, although we say yellow, but because that's the one that'll catch your eye, but you're right. It's more white than anything else and some black, but.
So now Sean is working on that. One of my favorite parts of the BRE cars is the two-tone roof.
Mm-hmm.
You see stripes going across the roof sometimes, but you don't see the roof
cut in half like a receding hairline.
Yeah, well, I think Jeremy Piven, 1993. It's funny, I said to Sean when he was taping it off yesterday afternoon, he was working on the roof, and I said, what's the roof? Is it 50-50? Like, what's the percentage with the yellow versus white? And he said, 45-55. So for some reason, you know, Brock's infinite design wisdom, he thought it'd look a little bit better to have a little less yellow on there.
Yeah.
I think it's 45-55, 45 yellow, but don't hold me to it.
Now, I'm picturing it, the front half is white and the back half is the yellow.
Yeah, they usually do that. And then I said, is the number on the roof? And he said, I think so, but then I couldn't remember that one either.
Yeah, I couldn't remember. I don't know.
I don't know either. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I don't know. We could talk to Brock at some point again, and I'm sure Brock will tell you something like, oh, also, I did 55 in the white in the front because it covers the driver and it's cooler because it's the white. And then if you ran, you know, like black or dark blue, it'd be hotter or...
Yeah, see if you can find a picture of not my BRE car, but just a BRE car, Morton's 46 car. I don't think the roof has a number on it. But anyway, Brock, I think, told us that he did the roof two-tone so he could kind of go up in the bleachers as a spotter or whatever and see the car better.
Yeah, I don't recall the number being on there.
Oh, it is. Wait a minute.
That's the red and the white.
Now we're trying to find a picture of the most famous one, and the colors in the front and the whites in the back, and the number is on it. So, look, we don't know anything. evidently.
Maybe the color is in the front.
It is
the A pillars.
It is
the color.
It is according to the pictures we've just seen.
Somebody better tell Sean.
All right. Now, also see here that the Speed Corps released their new build 1970 Charger for Kevin Hart.
Yeah. So they've been. We talked to the Speed Corps guys a few times. Goldberg's got a bunch of projects with those guys, but. Again, this is more the Kevin Hart story than it is just the Speed Car story, the Speed Corps story. But I don't know why still the articles are going, oh, Kevin Hart wrecked his first one. You know, he wasn't driving. It wasn't him. And it's not necessarily fair to throw the guy under the bus and go, yeah, you destroyed your first car. He let somebody drive it. And
right.
And, but that was a Speed Corps car as well, which I think he had purchased, and then they modified a little bit, but they built originally. But this new Speed Corps car is a 1970 Dodge Charger. It is kind of badass. So what they did is they used a five-axis machine to make molds of the body, and then they recreated the body entirely in carbon fiber, and then it sits on a full-frame chassis now.
The Dodge Charger is a giant car.
It's a big car. But actually, if you think about this, what better car to switch to a carbon fiber body? Because you probably cut 750 pounds off of it.
Really? That much?
Yes, because they did – Speed Corps did an all carbon fiber body 67, 68 Shelby Mustang, and they said it came in 600 pounds less.
67, 68 Shelby Mustang, which is a decent-sized car, but not as big as the Charger.
Not as big as that Charger. And it just the doors and the hood.
Much weight off.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they're saying this: the power-to-weight ratio now is supercar territory. Now, keep in mind, they put in Mopar's Helifant crate engines, 1,000 horsepower. but... Could you imagine, like, it's full-frame chassis, it's got a full cage, 14-point cage, but the body alone has got to be 700 pounds less, and just the modern suspension components, and even the engine being a big engine is probably lighter.
Leave this picture. I don't need the marker lights on the side. I don't need the big square parts bin marker lights on the side. I say lose them all together or put some Euro looking ones on there.
You know, they have a version of these lights where, you know, it's like a black plastic and it kind of blends it because the car is black. I mean, at least Kevin Hart actually saw the car and he said, I don't want to paint it now. Like, let's do a raw carbon fiber look. Let's do some trim pieces on it. The supercharger from the engine comes out of the hood, and then they dressed it up and smoothed it out and added some carbon, and it looks really good. But I think with the right trim and everything, just a good, polished, detailed carbon fiber is good. But you're right, you could black out the...
You know, the thing about
side markers.
The thing about these kinds of cars, and you know, don't get me wrong, I love the craftsmanship in all these kinds of builds. But, you know, there's a kind of inherent thing with these kinds of cars that I never really thought about until now. But they're not cars that you would take to the track and throw around.
Right.
Now, you could, but you're not. That's not the market for this car. If you want to take something to the track and throw it around, you get a 914, you put a six cylinder in it, you do a bunch of shit, and you go take that out to Willow or whatever, or maybe get a modern day Dodge Viper, and you breathe on that, and you take it to the track or some Porsche GT3, whatever. It's not a throw it around on the track kind of car. So now you're kind of left with two choices. You can either just sort of look at it in your garage, or you can take it out on city streets and do these like short bursts. You know, it's really about just putting your kids in the car, putting your girlfriend in the car, and scaring the shit out of them for 100 feet. You just you find some straight line on a Sunday in some industrial part of town, there's nobody around. You just punch it for one block.
Yeah.
And that then gets into the inherent danger part of like taking the 1,000 horsepower out and trying to throw it around a little bit.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really leave you much choice because your choices are take it to the track. I don't think Kevin Hart's doing that. stare at it in the garage and never drive it. I think you'd want to drive it.
I think he'll drive it.
Third choice, drive it, but just obey all the speed limits and be very moderate about it. That's not really on the table.
It could be interesting to take a car that size because it's been lightened up and do a little canyon carving, go through the Malibu canyons and see what it does, because you don't expect that car to be doing that.
Yeah, when
I was kind of interesting.
When I was doing the car show, we went out to Willow and I drove somebody's super breathed on, you know, resto mod, mm-hmm. whatever. God, I'm trying to think of what it was, but it was some resto mod, you know, yeah. and it was fun to drive on the track.
Yeah.
It's just, I just don't think you're going there, especially when the car's that perfect aesthetically, especially at a place like Willow where you will get off the track with a ton of horsepower.
Yeah. It's interesting what you were saying about like markers and stuff. Like Chip Foose is very famously shown a lot of his show cars, no mirrors, no side markers, really kind of cleaned up the lines. But I wonder what Speedcore was thinking here, because of course it's a luxury car at this point. Recaro seats, power everything, air conditioning, stereo, like all the modern stuff. I wonder if it specifically has side markers and mirrors because they were delivering it to a client and it needed to be street legal. Not bend the rules street legal, but like maybe there's some sort of
I think it's simpler. I think you get the OEM fenders, you pull the mold off the fender and there's a hole already there for like you literally pull a mold off a fender and the fender came that way.
Yeah. Which then brings up my original thought of they make, you know, you can get a flush mount, basically body colored, you know, sort of side marker. It has a little bit of a shape to it. It looks like mm-hmm. a little bit of a bump.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, from the photos that were shot 20 feet away, you wouldn't really notice it. It would just be, you know, sort of all one color. And then when you hit the light, obviously it blinks from underneath, but... It's kind of interesting.
So then there's the good for Kevin Hart. Get back on that horse.
You know, he went out after that accident. There was an event that they kind of kept it hush-hush because they shot a bunch of video. But it was Kevin Hart and the guys from Speedcore and I think Ralph Gilles from Dodge SRT, Goldberg. They all went out and did like a weekend at the Bondurant School and brought a bunch of different vehicles. Some customer cars and these types of vehicles. You know, they had Ford GT, they had a Senna, they had, you know, the track cars from Bondurant, and they went out there and just had like a whole weekend of it, and which I also appreciate. Like I appreciate Kevin Hart going, I wasn't driving, but I was in an accident, but you know, you kind of don't want to really be the guy that orders up the 1,000 horsepower car and doesn't at least get a little bit of instruction.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, so he went and did that.
Yeah, so he went and did it, and it seemed like he had a great time doing it as well. It's, you know, like, look, you because of your vintage racing, you get to get onto the track a few times a year and compete in a competitive environment. But it's still fun to, like, go out to Vegas like we did and just hit Speed Vegas for a few hours and – you know, in a car that's not yours, and you know, and actually, if you think about it, I don't know how much track time you said from the couple TV shows. How much track time do you get in a modern car, like GT500, like the Shelby or the 488 Ferrari, and you know, even the vehicles we get here to test the press drives, we don't get a lot of track time with those things. I mean, spending time on the track with a 488 or a GT3 Porsche is fantastic.
Absolutely. All right. So there's also a C2 Corvette. I guess that's 63 through 67.
So here's the thing. What's reimagined. Going on with that is we don't have a lot of information. There was just an announcement done. So Pete Brock, of course, a young Pete Brock, 19-year-old designer at Pete Brock, was working for GM. And his sketch for the C2 Corvette was the one chosen to become the car.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic achievement in a young designer's life, right? We talk about all the things that Pete Brock's done. People seem to kind of forget his life at GM, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the 63 to 67 Corvette. So there's a company in Ireland, Studio AVA. I don't know if they call it AVA or what, but Studio AVA is thinking about doing this reimagined 1,200 horsepower EV version, this all-electric version of the Corvette. And they brought in Pete Brock.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought in another friend of ours, Ian Callum, who is the chief of design at Jaguar and Aston Martin. He did the DB9.
It's the year, it was the 63, the split window year. I always get that screwed up. But the split window vet is one of the best looking American cars that's ever been produced.
And that's a Peter Brock design, which I think kind of gets lost on people.
Yeah.
So what they did is they went back to Pete. Pete's done this with the Shelby Daytona Coupe. He worked with Super Performance when he said, you know, the production car was a little different than what I had in mind for the car. You know, his Shelby Mustangs, he had thoughts on that. This as well.
He had thoughts on the Cobra Daytona.
Yeah.
Like when I talked to him, I do believe I spoke to him at the Italiano Concourse at Pebble Beach 10 years ago. And he was talking about what he did at Super Performance, I think, with the Daytona Cobra. And he just said, like, I didn't have time to do some of the stuff I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. But now that I have time, here's how I wanted it to go. I think he was telling me on the Daytona that the Daytona sides are very slabby.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you look at the original Daytona, they just kind of come down, you know, straight down. And if you look at the Super Performance ones, they kind of tuck in a little bit. It's got a little more shape to it.
He was telling us when we spoke to him a little bit at Goodwood Revival years ago when they had the Daytonas out there, as many of the original ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that as they built those, they evolved from one to the next. He goes, they look very similar, but he was able to point out little things that they did, you know, from chassis one to two to three to whatever, things like that. So they invited Pete Brock to come in and say, well, if we're going to do this car, what were your original thoughts? How would you like to freshen it up? And then, of course, Ian Callum is involved as well. And he left Jaguar a couple of years ago and has his own design studio and has done a few. He's done like a reimagining of the Vanquish, the most recent Vanquish, I think. And, you know, it's a very expensive kind of coach-built car like Fisker was doing years ago with his Fisker coach-built cars. But it has sort of his design touch going, well, here's some of the things I would fix on it. So I like the idea of Ian Callum and Pete Brock working on this project together. I'm okay with the idea of it being kind of an EV car.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know about this group in Ireland. I don't know much about them, but it should be interesting to see.
It's an interesting concept in general as it pertains to creativity. I think there's probably a television comic sort of version or even non-comic, but there's a version of here's what my vision was, you know, here's what my vision was if you're Ian or Pete. And then you have to go into this big corporation and kind of pitch it. And, you know, that's kind of what happens sometimes with comedy. Like you go, here's my idea for a sitcom. And then you go into a room with a bunch of fucking suits and it doesn't really come out like you wanted it to come out, you know? And so it's interesting to take these creative visionaries and say, okay, what were you trying to do with this car? And they go, well, here's what I wanted to do. But there's budget, there's time constraints, there's shareholders and shit like that.
Yeah.
So here's kind of what we ended up with, which is the shape of what I designed, but we didn't get the knockoffs. We had to use the fake hubcaps with the spinner.
The mirrors got three times as large. The bumpers got a little higher.
Yeah, we had to go with the 5-mile-an-hour bumper and, you know, a bunch of shit like that. And there was a ground clearance thing and, you know, whatever. And there's a DOT, blah, blah, blah. And so then to take that person with the vision and reunite them with the car and go, well, now you have all the time and all the money and you can just do it exactly as you wanted to do it. That's an interesting concept.
Yeah. And I think Peter Brock was involved on this sort of reimagining of the Shelby Mustang, the GT350. The group is OVC, Original Venice Crew, and they got a couple of the guys back going, what if we nipped and tucked one of these things? What would it be, you know, based on what we really wanted to do from the beginning?
Mm-hmm.
And that car is available for purchase, or those versions of the cars.
The CSI 73, 74, BMW Batmobile Group 5 car that won Sebring that we were kind of interested in.
Yeah.
That went to the Stratus auction. It got up to 650K, which is where it ended at the auction a few days back. That's a step toward the light, I think, yeah, for that auction company, because in the past they were like getting no bids or very low bids or whatever it is. I don't think $650,000 is enough to get that car. Not a lot of comps, very hard to tell. Yeah. I think maybe one of the first three CSI, Batmobile or Group 5 or whatever BMWs, but... And it's interesting to see. BMW is interesting because it's not Ferrari, it's not Porsche, and it's not Datsun. You know, it's sort of in between everything. You know, straight six. I feel like that car, someone needed to get to $1 million with that car, mm-hmm, and it didn't get there. But I don't know if it's sold or not. I think Maxipata could probably check. I do not think that thing's sold.
Stratus?
Yeah.
Stratus.auction, I think, is the website. See if it's up there. But yeah, they're starting to.
I'm pretty sure none of the ones on the screen are all the ones on the screen are unsold, but which one? You said CSI was at this one.
Oh, CSL, I meant. Okay. Sorry. Just too many. Yeah, you're on the recreation one, but yeah, unsold. So it got to 650 and it was unsold at 650, yeah, which means I got to feel the over under was $1 million. For that car's, yeah, a lot of history. That's an expensive car. Somebody wanted between 1.2 and 1.4 for that car.
Yeah.
And no, you know, and you can't say it's not worth it. Who the hell knows? Still curious why some people aren't bringing those cars to Bring a Trailer. I feel like they would get the money at Bring a Trailer.
Yeah. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes, but I don't know. Some people are going, hey, you know, somebody knows somebody, there's a relationship there, and they're trying to leverage that relationship. I guess that's what's going on. Bring a Trailer continue to move, continue to grow. I don't know if you saw one of their newest announcements, but they offer a vehicle shipping feature, basically kind of built in. Like you can, it's on the site now. As you bid on the car, and I guess you win the car, to be like, check the box. Here's the rate. It's already figured out. Uh-huh. You want enclosed transport or open transport, and one's this rate, one's the other rate. And I don't know who they partnered up with it, but you know, it's kind of nice. It makes it kind of easy and simple and books it kind of as quickly as possible. I don't know how, where it goes from there.
It's so funny.
But that's the next step, right? Delivery?
It's so funny how far we've come with the purchasing of a car, because it was always, you got to go out, you got to see the car, yeah, you got to test drive the car. You know, if you're looking at some old race car on the East Coast, you better buy Les a ticket, and he's got to fly out there, yeah, and he's got to inspect everything. And, you know, I guess
he'll come back with 19 shitty photos.
Right. I guess with all the digital photos and the 100 digital photos, I don't know.
It's all good. Yeah.
I'm not hearing a lot of buyer's remorse. Like and look, who knows what if I would, but I'm just saying, like, I don't hear a lot of people going, hey, the car was portrayed as this kind of car, and when I got it, it's not that at all.
Yeah.
You know?
And the price has gone up. Now, actually, for a long time, we would put a lot of faith in the quality of the car at an auction. You know, Gooding, we say, hey, this is for sale at Gooding. Then we expect and trust Gooding's representation of the car, RM's, you know, description of the car, and say, yeah, this is, you know, they wouldn't take it if it was wrong or broke or junk or whatever. And you're right, the quality of cars that especially the high dollar cars, I mean, people are going to Bring a Trailer spending hundreds of thousands of dollars sight unseen, and now they could just click the ship it now button basically and just get their $1 million car in the mail.
Audi's doing an EV based on Porsche Taycan?
Yeah, so I saw this car at the LA Auto Show, I don't know, like 2018. And it's based on the Porsche Taycan, but I don't know, it just kind of delayed for a while. And they're basically coming out with two versions of this. They have the e-tron GT and the RS e-tron GT. And I do like they're having this high-performance version. The pricing is about $100,000 to $140,000, 300-mile range, 0 to 60 in the threes, either version, 3.9, 3.2. Like, they're all fast as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing is, it's new for Audi, so initial customers can qualify for that $7,500 federal tax incentive. It's a little less expensive than the Porsche Taycan. And people are kind of coming in saying the Porsche Taycan, they don't really like the look as much. For me personally, I think the wheels are terrible. But the Porsche Taycan is kind of missing the mark. And I think the Audi looks pretty good. And the Audi interior is fantastic. It's got a big bulging hips to it. I like Audi's their version of the diamond stitch. You know, mm-hmm. their different shape to it. I think the interior looks great. I think the performance is going to be there. It's a low, sleek vehicle.
The rims are as weird as the Taycan.
Yeah. Again, I don't know why we're doing this. Like, it can be an EV and it doesn't have to look like it's out of a Tron movie or you know.
No, It's a good point. Like, we don't need the heads up on it's an EV judging by the rims.
Right.
Just make a killer looking GT car, which this is. But then the rims look a little weird.
Right.
Which is equally as weird as the Porsche rims. Although I've seen quite a few of those on the road. And
oh, believe me, Forge Line, HRE, those guys are laughing their ways to the bank because everybody must be buying $8,000 sets of rims from these guys going, it looks way better. It just looks so much better with a good set of rims on it.
Well, also, we're living in an interesting time, which is it used to be that if you were going after some very high performance driving, you know, high performance vehicles, blah, 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 it didn't fit with the electric, you know. So if you drove, so here's a concept, you know, a few years ago, you'd have the Leaf or the Volt or the Bolt or whatever it was. And then they had kind of the funky rim and let everyone know you were a tree hugger and you love the planet and you're driving your plug-in electric, blah, blah, blah. Then they started building electric supercars or flagship cars, $100,000 plus, you know, cars. But they're still signaling it's an electric car via the rim. And my thing is I don't know, if I pull up next to you at a stoplight, I'm not sure if I want to know it's electric. I just want to know it's a killer car.
I just want to know if the rims look good with the rest of the car. By the way, that Audi, look how sharp those lines are compared to the newest BMWs. Giant, ridiculous grill on the huge BMWs. And this has their rings just kind of small, kind of tucked in, a low profile hood on it. Like, it's a cool looking car. That's a good looking car.
Yeah, Audi's styling is killer, and their interiors are killer. And yeah, I don't know what happened with BMW.
Why they're all in on this giant grill. I just don't get the.
Is their grill bigger than a Lexus?
Oh my God! Look at any new BMW, Chris, and look at it, not even just the SUVs, but the cars. Look at the buck teeth on that thing.
Oh yeah, it's got a lot of Alfa Romeo.
It's massive, and there's all kinds of jokes about it, and I just don't. Yeah, look at this.
Yeah, it looks like Nader from Cars.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I don't... yeah.
This is why we were saying, I think, last week when I said, oh, a BMW has an M5 CS, which is this hot 640-something horsepower. That's the one you want because that's the last version you're going to get with the regular size grill. Mm-hmm. When they do a new version, it's going to have those giant buck teeth on it.
All right.
I don't know how long that lasts before they go. Actually, an example before we move on is the Aston Martin Vantage, the newest Vantage, had a big kind of mouth grill on it. Some people liked it, some people didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of years, I believe Aston Martin offered an option from the factory. You can get it with more of the subdued, different front end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can go, oh, if you want it to look like a classic mm-hmm. car, or you want it to look like the kind of the big mouth version, you could get either one now. Now, of course, they'll charge you $7,000 for the new bumper, but it looks a lot better with the revised bumper.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not sure where the big mouth, you know, bass kind of look is coming from for some of these car designers, but I'm with you and Audi. All right, if you got a car, let me tell you about Geico. Do you have a home? Do you own your home? Do you rent your home? Well, you got to have insurance, and if you're going to have your car, you got to have your auto insurance. How about you bundle? Geico makes it easy to bundle those policies. And you take your homeowners and your renter's insurance, you put it together with your automotive policy, and you save a whole bunch. So go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save when you get your bundle on at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, Oklahoma City, Bricktown Comedy Club, February 26th, 27th, doing live pod there and doing stand-up as well. And you can go to amcarolla.com, coming to Reno, coming to Waukegan, Illinois. Just go to adamcarolla.com, and then you can also check out all the stand-up for free on our YouTube page, youtube.com/AdamCarolla. What do you got, Matt?
Just check out the stuff I'm posting up on the social media, up on Motoring.
So, till next time, Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.
For the latest updates and call-in times, follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at CarCast Show. If you'd like to write in, fill out the form on CarCastShow.com. And don't forget to give us a nice rating on iTunes. CarCast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana. For more information, visit CarCastShow.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.